Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final happens tonight from Raleigh. We're in downtown Buffalo inside of KeyBank Center with one question for you, Marty, to start the show.
Yes.
We have talked so much about the highs and lows and roller coaster of the Stanley Cup Final. What would be the equivalent comeback in an NHL game that would mirror what happened in the NBA Finals last night?
So last night wasn't a roller coaster. Last night was a, you're on top of the world, and then it just, the one drop, right? There's no cone back up in the air and twins and turns.
But I think I was trying to look at it from the positive, like what type of comeback?
Yes.
So let's focus on the team that climbed out of the, so what would be the NHL equivalent deficit in a game that was overcome last night in the NBA?
So in win probability, okay, when the Spurs went up 29 points in the second quarter and 27 at halftime, the win probability was 99%. Okay. In the fourth quarter, when they were up by 20, 95 to 75, the win probability was 99.6%. They only had a 0.4% chance the Knicks of winning that game. So you know what I decided to do? I'm like, what was the win probability when Vegas was up 4-0 after two periods in game three?
They won though.
Yeah, but what was the win probability that time?
Yeah.
It was 99.8%. Mm-hmm. It's the same type of comeback, but you
still
had
haven't
to win.
Answered my question.
Well, if Carolina had won that game 5-4 instead of losing 5-4
in the
OT,
you think a 4-goal deficit is the same as what happened in the NBA?
According to the win probability,
no,
that's what
not,
it is.
I don't care about probabilities. I'm
well,
talking
that's what
about
the numbers.
But
are
no,
saying.
But you played. Yeah, I know, but you could have a win probability with a 3-goal lead or a 7-goal lead that are very similar. I'm saying, as a player and seeing what happened in New York last night, what do you think it would have taken if you're on the bench in an NHL game where you're staring at what? Is it 5-0?
I say
5-0,
7-0? 5-0, 6-1. That's probably what I think is very comparable. And look, 5-0.
See, it doesn't seem to me, because we see comebacks in the NHL all the time, that doesn't seem insurmountable to me. And honestly, you know this to be true, because this is how I am with sports and everything. And I said, when we talked about the final, I was like, I want the Spurs to win, but I know the Knicks are going to win because they've done this all year long.
They've come back
and
all year.
And the only thing I knew about last night's game was I saw the score at halftime, and I was like, the Knicks will win this game.
Yeah.
And they did.
Now, this is four straight games. And I know we're talking basketball, but these two finals,
it's
sports.
Yes.
And these two finals have been drunk. Like, literally, they're fun. They're fun. They're crazy. But the mistakes, the mental mistakes that some teams have made. I look at Vegas. They were up 4-0. They give up a goal, make it 4-1. They give up another goal to make it 4-2. They ice the puck right away. Defensive zone face-off. Jordan Staal scores 4-3. Mm-hmm. I'm like, don't ice the puck. Don't make that mistake. Or don't. That was a brain fart at that moment. And then I'm looking at the Spurs last night, and I'm like, the amount of mistakes that was made in the fourth quarter, especially in the last 5 minutes, the De'Aaron Fox play with 10 seconds left, when he got that rebound, and he decides to go for the layup as opposed to just try to get fouled. Like, how many times do you see it in a regular season game or in even a playoff game? You're like, you know, just hang on to the ball. They're going to foul you. And he goes for the layup? Like, that was a brain cramp at that moment. I mean, I know Charles Barkley after the game said it was an embarrassing mistake, and he put it on thick. I don't think it's an embarrassing mistake. I think it's a brain cramp that a veteran player can't make in that moment. And then the same thing, like, I look at the Spurs, and I look at, it's almost like you play a team and let's just pretend Ovechkin and the Washington Capitals, and you're on the power play, and you're like, you know what? We're going to let him have his one-timer.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, when the inbound happened from the Knicks, and they decided not to put anybody in front of OG Anunoby on the inbound pass, well, you know what? Somebody, again, was not prepared for that play, because once the inbound is made to Brunson, somebody's got to know that, hey, we got to go cover Anunoby now because he's going to come in for the rebound, which he did.
Yeah.
Another brain cramp at that moment. So I say 5-0, 6-1, like in the early stage of the second period. Still games to be played, and that's what happened down 29 with a lot of games to be played. The Knicks come back.
Do you know why I was quizzing you so hard on it?
How many times have a team come back from...
Because I could not think of anything remotely close in Stanley Cup playoff or finals history.
No.
And the league has confirmed to me that the max deficit ever overcome in a Stanley Cup final game is 3.
To win.
Yeah.
Like Carolina came back. Yeah, Carolina came back from a 4-0, but
yes,
they lost.
Exactly. So
it's a moot point. Like, okay, this last night from the Knicks.
Like 3. Again, think of that. Like 3. It's happened like, I don't know, 7 times in Stanley Cup final history.
Should be nothing.
Well, in today's NHL, it sure feels like nothing. This is the thing. Like, yeah. I'm basing all of this on feel. And what I felt was the Knicks were never out of it. And what I feel in hockey, and it's like, this type of history should change at some point.
Colorado came back from 3 this year. You know, like in the second round, they come back from 3. They win against Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Like game 5, I think. They came back from 3 to win, and boom, they're moving on.
Yeah.
Like, you see it. Now, again, just to bring our community, our Western New York area, what the Knicks did last night, it's as significant for me as what the Buffalo Bills against the Houston Oilers back in the days, right? Frank Wright coming back, the big comeback, the biggest comeback in NFL playoff history until there was another one. But yeah, the biggest comeback at that moment. I think there was never a team that came back from 29 in the finals to win, and the Knicks did it. And again, great on the Knicks. But I look at the Spurs, and you talk about learning lessons.
Yeah, but here's the thing. See, I could easily see San Antonio winning a couple more games here.
I could see it, too, because they can double-digit leads in the first quarter every game.
Exactly. And so you were just going to say experience. If you're able to somehow detach the emotional letdown and hard feelings in a very short period of time here, the talent is the talent, and
talent, and especially in basketball. But you know, I remember Wayne Gretzky after losing in 1983 to the New York Islanders, saying, "Man, like we thought the Islanders were going to be celebrating, and it was going to be like." And then we walked by their room, and they were all like, you know, like ice bags and tired and all of that. Now they had won 4 Stanley Cups in a row. That's definitely you're going to get tired after that. But I do feel like the Spurs remind me of the Oilers a little bit in that sense, is that Wemby's mistake in, what was it, game 2, where he hits his you know, teammate in the back trying to go up for the winning basket. Now what happened in game 4. There's a lot of learning that this team is doing right now, and hopefully they're getting the lessons.
Well, Kontsa Helenius learned a lot in his 2 years so far in the American Hockey League, and then elevated to the Sabres in season, and his golden goal at the Worlds. No surprise that he was named one of the American Hockey League's top prospects this year, which is, you know, it's perfectly appropriate based on the fact that the Amerks and most AHL teams have never had a teenager lead them in scoring through the entire year and be a point per game in that process. And, you know, you've been a part of like all rookie teams and prospect moments and things
prospect.
Like that. Yeah, top prospect. I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
And, you know, it's funny. But
this is just validation and confirmation of everything we've seen over his 2 years as a pro.
If the season had ended and Kontsa Helenius hadn't played in the playoffs with the Sabres, and then he gets this award, we'd be like celebrating it, right? It would have been like just taking that award in a bubble, saying, hey, you're a top prospect at that moment. You're still young. You have a long time. Then you add that to the playoff run, what he did in the playoff. Then you add that to the world championship run, what he did with Barkov, winning the, you know, the gold medal at the world championship, scoring the golden goal in overtime against Switzerland. And you're like, wait a second. Like, this is just I don't want to call it a footnote, but what Kontsa Helenius was able to do once his season was over in the American League is even another step past being named a top prospect player in the AHL, because he was able to prove it now that it's like, hey, I can play on the bigger stage, not just at the AHL level.
And the acknowledgement from the American Hockey League, I can guarantee you, would have happened regardless of whether he had a playoff appearance with the Sabres 100%. Or the World Championship moment, based on his point-per-game pedigree, which is almost unheard of as a teenager in the AHL. But I do think it's resonating completely differently now. You're right. It's just a footnote.
Yeah.
But if none of the other stuff had happened, and we were 2.5 months removed from the end of the Amerks season, and this note comes across the wire, people would go, huh, that's cool. But they're not going to sit there having lunch today, having conversations about Helenius being in the top nine or top six next year if they didn't have the springtime moments that they witnessed, you know, firsthand.
I think it would be kind of like when he was drafted. Like, oh, maybe this kid could break the lineup and could make a difference. But it would be like if everything is in place, if he excels at training camp, it would have been a nice conversation. We'd still be talking about it. It's a good award. It's fun. But now we're looking at Konstantin Helenius and saying, could they move a center so he can play center? Could he play with Noah Austin? Is Yuri Kulik going to be at center or on the wing? Like, you're looking at those three making an impact for the Buffalo Sabres next year. And how does Jarmo Kekalainen and Lindy Ruff going to handle their roster because of those three, and especially because of Konstantin Helenius and what he's done? I think it's fantastic.
Any updates across the league before we get into the final? We'll have Darren Dreger later on in the show today, a little later time slot for him. Yes. He's on site for the finals, and obviously we can get into this more. I almost want to just keep this lighter in some way. Did you learn anything more about the Oilers and Babcock yesterday that's worth repeating today?
I heard a couple of funny stories, and because I want to make it a little lighter about, like, okay, we've heard all the invasion of privacy and wanting to, like, go into people's phone or whatever. But some of the players in Columbus, and Cameron Gaunce, he works at TSN. His brother Brandon was in the Columbus organization, and when he heard from other guys that Babcock was asking to see pictures and stuff like Instagram and your photo roll or whatever, that he took a whole day to clear up his pictures, and he put the pictures of family, of workouts, on the ice video, of because he's like, if I'm going to have that meeting and he wants to see my phone, I'm going to present myself in the best possible light, which is kind of funny. So I don't think everybody at the time felt like, well, this is absolutely disrespectful and impossible to deal with. Some players were like, yeah, you know what? You want to look through my phone? I'll take the time to give myself the right preparation for an interview and coming in. So some people thought it was funny. Some people didn't like it. Now, you know, we talked to David Pignota and others. They say this could take a long time. I don't think the league or the Oilers would be investigating or moving forward if it was to take a long time. I think they want to have that done here probably in the next couple of months, because the Oilers, the McDavid, Draisaitl want to make sure they move forward.
It's so ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but that's what it is.
Do you think I would have ever been able to be a good coach? You can be honest.
I think you would have.
I don't think I've ever told you that I wish, like, that would be, like, my one other thing.
Job?
Yeah.
Be a coach?
Because obviously I have no experience in anything else in life, basically. But
I wonder if you would have been a better head coach or a better assistant coach. That's my question now.
My
this or that.
Question that I would ask myself is, would I have been able to evolve the way the game has evolved coaching? I think I could, based on my love of the intricacies and the detailed studying and preparation that goes into it. Like, I think when I'm all in on something like that, I would be all in. The reason I'm telling you this or asking you this today is because there's a head coach opening in San Diego now in the AHL. And, like, if I was ever to do, like, a 180 or a hard transition, like, who wouldn't? So the head coach there, Matt McIlvain, has left San Diego to take an assistant job with the Boston Bruins.
Yes.
So there's an opening. And I'm thinking,
why not?
What it must be like if you're trying to ascend the ranks in coaching and San Diego opens up.
Yeah,
like,
because you're a West Coast guy, so you'd go to San Diego and you'd say, I will do the video. I will do anything.
It's the Ducks affiliate, by the way. Yes.
If I did not go through the transition that Lindy Ruff went through in the mid-2000s, right? Like, he started coaching here in Buffalo in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. He was tough, the way that he played, the way that he coached, and all of that. And then in the mid-2000s, after the lockout, he totally changed his approach to the game, and he had an evolution. And I believed in Lindy Ruff when he came back that he could have continued that evolution to adjust to the players now.
Yeah.
There's some coach that don't have that evolution, that they hit the wall at a certain time and they will never have success again because they don't have that evolution.
What am I lacking as a potential head coach? Intelligence?
No, I think you would probably, at this moment, if I looked at your resume, I would say, where is your coaching experience?
Aww. There's a fair amount of it that actually exists in this realm.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, being on the bench.
No, I know.
And so, bench time. So because I'm a terrible bench person.
You almost pigeonholed me into an assistant role, which is fine. But when you view me as that, am I the ornery one that is always trying to press buttons? Or am I the positive one that is there to be a helping hand?
So I think you would be the one that would always have these really good conversation with the players on the off day at practice, skating around on the ice. And then at game time on the bench, you would be a complete different person. Man, I would not want to be a referee that makes a bad call, trying to come over and explain why he made that call, and you coming up with, no, no, no. Last week, you called this that way because your memory is so great that you would remember calls that referee made a long time ago. But
dare to dream.
But we talk coaching, right? We talk evolution. Scotty Moman, the biggest thing for him was being able to you know, evolve over the years. But you talk to the players here in Buffalo, they didn't have a good relationship, a good time with Scotty Bowman. He was kind of cut between Montreal and Detroit. I think that Buffalo allowed Scotty to maybe evolve a little bit more later.
And think of tonight and the Stanley Cup Final and the coaches, which, again, based on in-game moments and situations, we've talked a lot about Brind'Amour and Tortorella. Yes. And it's game five tonight. But were you even a little bit surprised when Lindy Ruff was last in studio here on this show with how genuine and kind he was towards Brind'Amour? Like, it seemed to gush out. Like, he said, like, Rod is a really, really good coach.
I think the big thing is that when you're a coach and you prepare for another team, you don't just prepare for Sebastian Aho and Andrei Svechnikov and Jacob Slavin. You prepare for what the coach is going to do.
Yeah.
And so you are studying other coaches, how they approach a game, how do they change their lineup, how do they do matchups. And I think there's probably some coaches, and Lindy would never tell us who, that are like, I know I'm going to have that coach in my back pocket by the middle of the first period. Mm-hmm. And there's coaches that you're like, oh boy, this is going to be a tough matchup. And I think that's why he speaks, because he hasn't been able to really have success against Rod Brind'Amour in the last year and a half. But still, like, before
he's had home ice wins. Obviously, the team still hasn't won in Raleigh since
struggling
in a decade.
Raleigh, but that's where you get the feel for a coach and what they're able to do.
So a different angle then on game five tonight. What's the one coaching move that needs to happen for Brind'Amour and for Tortorella for their teams to have success?
And this is going to be, like, I'm going back to 1982, but I think Rod Brind'Amour should carry a whip behind the bench and get Svechnikov and Aho going. Because they're not going to win if those, like, it's great now. Stahl is picking up the slack.
Right.
And Ehlers is picking up the slack. And you've got Stankoven, Blake, and Hall that are picking up the slack. But you're going into a best of three. You have two wins to win a Stanley Cup. And Sebastian Aho and Andrei Svechnikov, for 3.5 rounds now, have been, like, almost, like, invisible. They've had their moments, but they're just not impacting the game. And I'm like, that's where Carolina has to get going. They have to get... And I think I would go back and put Jarvis back with Aho and Svechnikov, where Jarvis has been with Stahl and Ehlers. Mm-hmm. Stahl and Ehlers can get working with Martinook. They've shown that. But I would go back and say, you guys are at home. I may even give you a shift or two against the fourth line of Vegas, because I want to really get you guys going. That's the one move. The other move for Vegas, for me, is, okay, now I would put Barbashev, Eichel, and Dorofeev back together. Because we've seen Stone on the top line the last couple of games. And it's worked for Stone, but it hasn't worked for Barbashev as much and for Eichel as much. I would go back with Dorofeev, Eichel, and Barbashev, being that they're on the road.
And Bussy expected, as Freddie Anderson, once again, not on the ice for morning skate.
Yeah, not with the team with morning skate. Did skate before on his own. I mean, it just tells me that, you know, number one, Anderson's not 100%. It's not just a rest now. If it was just a rest, he'd be back with his team. So he's not 100%, but I expected Bussy to go. Bussy knows how to win. I'm not saying Bussy is going to steal you a game, but Bussy has not found ways to lose games.
Right.
And Freddie Anderson has found ways to lose games at times, and that's been the knock on him, is he can be so good and then so inconsistent, losing a game, giving up a bad goal. I saw a comment on social media where they said, Freddie Fivel is back. That's because, like, that's when you see the signs of fatigue and maybe that's going the other way. I think Bussy gives you the best chance to give your team a chance to win. Not steal you a win, but just put your team in a position to win.
Hmm. I think those criticisms are highly overrated and, you know.
Well, they come with the territory.
Yeah. But I don't think they are necessarily.
I like Freddie Anderson. I think he's a really good
and
goalie.
And I think games like that are going to happen. I hate when they be, you know, a certain aspect of them becomes like a focal point. It's like, you know what? Goals are going to go in, and it doesn't really matter where, whether it's 1 through 7 holes, you know.
22.
And, right. So, but anyway, it is what it is, and it should be another fantastic.
Yes.
Game tonight in the Stanley Cup Final. Darren Dreger is going to join us a little later from Raleigh. The series, of course, is tied at 2. Have you attended a Sabres game during the 25-26 season? We want to hear from you. Complete our postseason survey at sabres.com/survey. You'll be entered for a chance to win Sabres jerseys and autographed pucks. Stay with us. Sabres Live rolls on after this.
Get back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Don't forget, Darren Dreger, our hockey insider from TSN, is coming up from Raleigh. We'll talk Stanley Cup Finals, but I think the list is long of things to do around the NHL, based on the fact that we are just over 2 weeks out from the draft, not to mention free agency around the corner. So stay tuned for that. Mm-hmm. Time now for D&D.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
Take it away, Marty.
Okay, so this is interesting because the Scottish banter on X has basically introduced and warned their Scottish people that are coming to the U.S. or North America to be careful when they use certain language and certain words that doesn't mean the same thing in the U.S. So they basically are saying a piece. Well, in America, it means a gun, and in Scotland, it means a sandwich. So don't go in through the TSA at the airport saying that, oh, your grandma made you a piece for the flight to take on, because you may not make it to the U.S. if you fly. So that's kind of funny to know that certain words mean completely different things in the banter that it is. So, yeah, so that's I like to think that's dazzling. To know that
right.
It's so different.
Yes, but it's also disturbing the nature of, you know, where people have to think sometimes just in the context of security and all the rest of it. Now,
but it's like, you know what? Like, it could be very simple. I remember when Danny Briere, JP Dumont, those guys played in Switzerland.
Yes.
And during the lockout of 04, 05 and whatnot, they're like, we came back to practice. We came to practice late, and they're like, where were you guys? They're like, well, we had a flat. And they're like, what do you mean you had a flat? Well, we had a flat. They called it a puncture. A flat's an apartment. Yeah. They couldn't understand what they were saying.
Do you know what a flat is in Western Canada?
No.
Case of beer.
A flat's a case of beer?
Yes.
Well, okay.
One of the first things I learned in college. So.
I could understand you being late for practice if you had a flat. But,
see?
Or a puncture.
That could also be very disturbing for the hockey club.
The coach would be worried about you if you had a flat before practice. But different expression could mean different things. So give, you know, everybody that's traveling from around the world a little grace.
Disturbing.
Disturbing for me, the New York fans in New York City, the Knicks fans or whatever, as the Spurs were going back to their hotel last night, throwing stuff at Wembanyama. Look, he got hit with an egg and whatever. Like, this is stupid. This is stupid. I get we're all fans, but I would hope that if, let's say, the Sabres were playing in a Stanley Cup final against the Vegas Golden Knights, and after the Sabres won a game and the Knights stayed overnight and traveled the next day.
Or lost a game,
whichever. You're absolutely right, Duffer. That if Jack Eichel was walking to his hotel, nobody would throw stuff at him. You want to get there and be like, boo, or whatever. Okay, but you're not assaulting people. I feel like that was very disturbing from the Knicks fans or the New York people at Wembanyama and the Spurs last night.
You believe that was on this date in 1970. Think about this. It's June, and like we're sitting here talking about the Stanley Cup final, right? But back then, this was the day.
Oh, the draft.
This was the day that Buffalo selected the franchise, Gilbert Perreault, with the first overall pick in the 1970 draft. Like, it's amazing how one pick shaped the incredible growth, Popularity, respect of a franchise for its first decade and a half.
You know, you watch sports.
And beyond, quite frankly.
You watch sports and you get amazed by the athletic nature of a certain individual and the grace and the power. And I think Gilbert Perreault was that. Like, you know, like getting the puck and then all of a sudden you get out of your chair or your seat or your couch and you're like, man, look at number 11. And the funny thing is sometimes you see players getting drafted and 40 years later, 50 years later, 56 years later, you're looking at, you're like, man, they don't look anything like Gilbert looks exactly the same now than he did back then. The same hair, the same facial expression.
He would appreciate
expression.
That compliment.
Like when he was here this year.
Yeah.
Like, I went to the suite, saw his family, saw him, and I'm like, he looks so good. And he looks exactly like he did when he was 18 or 19 years old.
Darren Dreger, our hockey insider from TSN, is coming up as we go around the NHL. Stay with us.
Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres fans, lock in your seats for 26-27, the season that is not that far away. You can get a Sabres 10-game plan, enjoy per-game savings, playoff ticket priority, and a guaranteed seat location. Choose from two plans, each featuring one matchup against either Tampa or Montreal, plus nine more games. Learn more and secure your plan at sabres.com/10. Obviously led the show today talking about comebacks, and Darren Dreger is on site at the Stanley Cup Final. He joins us, our hockey insider from TSN, and, you know, we think of hockey and playoff comebacks and the Miracle on Manchester, and we referenced earlier, Dregs, that in Stanley Cup final play, the biggest comeback we've ever seen, and it's happened seven times, is a three-goal deficit to win a game, you know, so that's a far cry from what happened in the NBA last night. What's the reverberations of the NBA finals into the Stanley Cup final tonight?
Yeah, I mean, outside of the media, who obviously talked about it, we talked about it a lot, just, you know, the trials and tribulations of that game four of the NBA Finals last night. I did not expect John Tortorella, the head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights, to engage. You know, we know how Torts operates basically all the time, but, you know, then his focus is really zeroed in when you get into, especially going into game five of the Stanley Cup Final. And he was asked about whether he watched the game last night, the NBA final game, game four, and he said he did. And then the follow-up was essentially, well, when you watch a game like that and the highs and lows and ultimately, you know, how the Knicks prevailed, like, what are you thinking? And he gave a very thoughtful answer, talking about how in high-pressure situations, the best of the best are forced into making tough decisions, and often they're grand mistakes. But that's all part of the environment of pro sport and where you get to when you're in a championship final. Honestly, like when the question was first being posed, I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be Torts just going, you know what? I'm not worrying about any other sport. I'm not worrying about any other championship. All I'm thinking about is my team and going into game five. But it was a very thoughtful answer, and it speaks from experience, right? And a recent experience of this Stanley Cup final, you know, did anybody predict that this Stanley Cup final was going to average 8.3 goals per game? I don't think anybody did. And it's been riddled with mistakes, multiple goal leads that have evaporated, but it's been highly entertaining. So good on Torts for answering the question, but providing some insight and experience based on where he's at now.
Dregs, for those that are active on social media, that's a reminder to be careful with your takes at moments. Because our good buddy Brian Hayes, who hosts Overdrive on, you know, TSN Radio in Toronto, at 10:01 last night, halftime, he goes, "You can feel the panic at MSG, complete and absolute dummying by the Spurs."
I saw that.
And then later that night, Jeff O'Neill, hashtag. Yeah. Ice cold takes. Like, you got to be careful when you start to go, you know, on social media to put your big takes out there. When you can have comebacks, and we saw 4-0 lead disappear.
Yeah.
We've been seeing two goal leads disappears in every game. Do you think we got to have a bit of a tighten up or button up game in game five tonight, or it's going to be the same thing as we saw in the first four?
Well, I hope it's the same thing that we've seen in the first four, because as all of us who have no skin in the game, it's been wildly entertaining.
Yes.
I mean, just the ebb and the flow of how this series has gone, how each game, how each period has gone. Who doesn't want more of that? Now, both dressing rooms, the players inside the rooms did talk about this, and they said, look, I can't imagine that we're in for more of what we've already seen. And maybe that speaks to both teams tightening up a little bit. But, you know, we've seen early swings, and then, you know, it almost forces, you know, the team that goes down early to abandon their strategy and their structure because now they're chasing the lead, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll see how it all boils down. But Mark Stone has openly talked at varying points of the series of how the game has evolved. We're not just talking about this postseason, maybe in general, where, yeah, you'd like to think that, you know, you do as best as you can at providing some sort of matchup strategy, mm-hmm. but it kind of goes out the window. And skill takes over. And what we're seeing in this series is an abundance of skill, and an abundance of skill coming from veteran players. Again, I don't know where you guys had Jordan Staal on your bingo card when you're coming into this series and you're thinking about Conn Smythe contenders. But I'll tell you, if Carolina wins this series,
yes,
how do you overlook Jordan Staal as a primary Conn Smythe candidate? It's an investment that each individual player makes, and both sides have, again, a long list of players who have contributed in different ways, and a lot of it has been offensively more than defensively.
Well, can't wait for Game 5 tonight, but there's so many things on the calendar that are rapidly approaching, like the draft and free agency, and I don't think we've, like, from our standpoint, Dregs, asked you enough about the class of RFAs and the urgency for teams to get some deals done with these guys before we start talking about other terms and dollar figures post July 1st. Like, you know, when you look at Anaheim, for example, and you've got the deals of Connor Gauthier and Leo Carlson to do, and Chicago's got Connor Bedard, and here in Buffalo you got Zach Benson, completely different, but also very important. Like, what are you hearing on that front as far as developments, and if there is, dare we say, urgency from either teams or player camps to get some stuff done here?
I wouldn't say urgency, but strong appetites for sure. And a recognition, especially from the class of players, Duffer, that you've mentioned here, that, look, I mean, it's a timing issue more than anything. And I don't just speak to the teams. I speak, obviously, to the player representatives, too. And I'm getting a genuine sense from both sides. Look, there's still plenty of time. Don't worry about it. And the notion of an offer sheet on any one of the players that you've just mentioned, sure, that's sexy fodder for talk shows like this one, right? But it doesn't happen very often. Of course, it happened. It happened to the Edmonton Oilers, where the St. Louis Blues found a way to pick their pocket on two pretty good players now within that Blues organization. But when you're talking about Zach Benson, or you're talking about Leo Carlson, or Dorofeev here with the Vegas Golden Knights, I mean, it's not like these organizations and their general managers wake up towards the end of the year and go, oh, that's right, Zach Benson's an RFA. No, I mean, come on. Or even Vegas, to me, is the best example because of all the hoops that Kelly McCrimmon and manager of the Vegas Golden Knights seem to jump through with ease at varying points of the year. So these general managers are chess players. They're not playing checkers. They're multiple steps ahead. But that then leads us to different conversations. So you mentioned Leo Carlson, Duffer, in Anaheim. Well, you know, the Anaheim Ducks are quickly running into a money situation too, right? So what do they do? And there's lots of talk around, okay, well, is Trouba gone? What about John Carlson? These guys are pending unrestricted free agents. There's Mason McTavish trade chatter out there yet again. You know, he is going to be a topic du jour, I think, before something happens. But one thing leads to another. But the one thing that I do know is that all the guys that were talking about here, top priority for the general managers involved. It's just a matter of trying to get something done that works for all parties.
So Jason Robertson and Pavel Dorofeev are basically two of the bigger names that are on that RFA list. Do you think there's a trade before we get to offer sheets, which is July 1 and further? Do you think there's a trade that could happen in those two cases for teams to say, hey, you know what? We're not going to wait for the offer sheet window to open, other teams to get in there. We're going to make that trade, and then we'll sign the player right away.
Well, yeah, I think it is possible. I think it, you know, you're not talking, Marty, about the idea of trading Jason Robertson if you're the Dallas Stars. Or correct me if I'm wrong.
Well,
that
it could
talking
be because
about?
You know they only have $10 million under the cap, right? So if you can't move somebody else, maybe that's the avenue they have to go down to.
Yeah, and I'm not here to say that it's not going to happen. I think the view from management of the Dallas Stars is, he's represented by Andy Scott, who represents all the top players with the Dallas Stars, right? You name them, Wyatt Johnson, Mikko Rantanen, Thomas Harley, go down the list. Andy Scott has his own street named after him as a player agent in Dallas. And, you know, he took over the file of the Robertson brothers from Pat Brisson of CAA. And Andy Scott, as a lot of the top agents, is noted as being a bit of a deadline guy, right? So Dallas would love to keep Jason Robertson. So I think that the possibility of trade is unlikely, but I can't say that for certain until you get to that place where you're right at the finish line and you know that the ask from Jason Robertson is not attainable. You're just not comfortable as an ownership group of going down that road. I don't think that Dallas is there yet. I don't think they're there yet with Jason Robertson. So if you're willing to expand the idea of that, and we just saw it from Dylan Larkin and the Detroit Red Wings. I don't think we've ever been in a place before, or at least recent history, where these top guys are willing to step out and say, it's time for a change. You know, the idea of better players, top players asking for trades isn't new. That doesn't happen on a regular basis, but historically it has happened. But these players have more swagger now than they ever have been or ever have had. And whether it's management or it's player agents, they keep telling me, buckle up, because this offseason is going to be highly active with some of these bigger players definitely in play.
Does agent Andy have a flat in Plano, Texas?
Well, $1 billion flat.
He's probably building it right now based on everything that's gone on there, yeah.
Okay, so now, I mean, Robertson, Carlson, Carragottier, like all these guys. And we come back to Buffalo.
Well, hang on. Why don't we ask about Robert Thomas? Because sense that with Andy Strickland reporting, you know, last week that, you know, Thomas is staying put in St. Louis, like that's the plan. Like, what do you think on that, especially with, because we discussed this yesterday, like, Dregs, you can go through every local market's news cycle on an almost every other day basis, and so many teams are looking to upgrade at the high-end center position. Like, can we really just sit back and assume that Robert Thomas is not going to be asked about and prodded about? Like, how do you view all that?
No, I'm not suggesting for a moment that Andy's reporting is flawed. In the moment, I think that that's a messaging that the St. Louis Blues want to get out there. But maybe that's because they exhausted the conversation or felt like they did to get to the trade deadline and weren't able to push it over that finish line, right? Mm-hmm. And that's Doug Armstrong at the time at the helm as general manager. So now you have a management shift over to Alex Steen. But I still believe that the St. Louis Blues are a team that has a strong appetite to do something large. Something large, okay? And I think we've talked about this before, speculation that they'd like to move up in the draft. Is there any way they can get as high as number two, as an example, the San Jose draft pick? You know, Stenberg, they've got his brother already in the organization with the St. Louis Blues. So maybe there's a way to grab Stenberg from a draft perspective. Okay, well, how do you get to number two, right? I mean, you know, the San Jose Sharks aren't gifting that pick away. You're going to overpay to acquire that pick. And I know that they're one of the teams that was interested in having the conversation with San Jose said the message they were getting back from San Jose was they really didn't want to drop down to number four. So now you go back to, okay, player for player type of trade situation. So to say the door is closed on Robert Thomas weeks in advance of the possibility, to me, is a stretch. I'm hearing more about Jordan Kyrou than I am Robert Thomas. But, I mean, teams circle back on trade possibilities all the time. So until I hear Alex Steen or Doug Armstrong come out and say, hey, we're not trading away Robert Thomas, then I think teams, doesn't matter what the media think, doesn't matter what we talk about, I think teams are going to continue to call.
because we know about Dylan Larkin, and I think it puts Detroit in a very tough spot right now, having to deal with just a limited amount of teams and not being able to get the value maybe that you would want. Do you think that, for example, St. Louis is going to stay quiet? And could Colton Parayko be, again, a player that maybe they put out there and they ask to waive his no trade? We know that that didn't happen for Buffalo. But if you talk San Jose, that could use or need a top-end defenseman like that. Do you think that St. Louis with Thomas, Kyrou, and maybe Parayko, we could see Parayko on the go as well?
Well, you could, for sure. You know, I think that there's been some management discussion with Colton Parayko probably at the end of the year where, you know, they didn't say that they were going to shop him. They basically said, look, you're a valuable part of the Blues organization. I think, though, that Colton Parayko and his representative, Jerry Johansson, are at least prepared for the possibility of that happening. And they weren't prepared for it at the trade deadline because all they were hearing was from guys like me reporting on the possibility in the trade conversations that the St. Louis Blues were having leading up to the trade deadline. And Parayko really wasn't given a heads up at that point. And only when there was a deal that was really close with Buffalo was Parayko brought into the equation. Then, as we know, you know, the rest, as they say, is history. Mm-hmm. He just wasn't prepared to make a decision at that point. So I'm sure that that resonated with him. I'm sure that sticks with him to a degree. But last time I checked, it's all quiet on that front. But I don't think that either Jerry Johansson or Colton Parayko would be surprised if management of the Blues came to them in this offseason.
Dregs, we're getting a little tight for time here. Sebastian Kosa's name has been, you know, out there a little bit more this week from a Red Wings goaltender prospect standpoint and interest from others. Yeah. And it was a couple of weeks earlier where Devon Levi and his name was out there, you know, in the ongoing search for some teams that need a backup. Like, how do you view Levi's value, Kosa's value, and any intrigue around both or either at this point?
Well, I would say Kosa's value is really high. Fellas, I'm hearing more and more about him than I am Levi, to be fair. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that there isn't any interest in Levi. Kosa, though, is ready to be an NHL goaltender, so I'm told. Whether or not he's ready to take on the responsibility of being a number one, I don't know. But I had a conversation with somebody in the know about him earlier today. He's hoping he gets traded because the path in Detroit is more complex and complicated, and he just wants to prove that he's NHL ready.
About 30 seconds here, Dregs. Babcock in Edmonton, is it going to happen quickly, long? Can they make moves? Can they acquire players before they get a coach? What happens there?
Yeah, I mean, that's a spicy one, and it's been well documented, right? So the NHL has an investigation that they have to go through. You know, the alleged invasion of players' privacy back in 2023 when Babcock was head coach of the Blue Jackets. So they're going to take their time. Look, they don't want to drift the focus away from the positive, which is the Stanley Cup final. Mm-hmm. But obviously, Edmonton is waiting, and they need an answer sooner than later. And it's too tough to say which way this is going to go, whether he's allowed to come back, whether Edmonton pushes away, or whether Babcock just says, I'm not dragging my family through this again, so to be determined.
Yes or no, Bruce Cassidy will be employed by this time next week.
No, I think that's still early.
Perfect timing. Like Dregs, thank you so much. Enjoy Game 5 tonight in Raleigh.
All right, guys, thank you.
Amazing.
There, I think it depends if the final will be done by next week.
That's the point. That's the nuance of the question.
Yes, exactly. I know. So that's my answer, and I'm sticking to it.
Man, if that didn't get you even more excited for the speculation around the draft, like, and I get it. Trust me. We know. There's been many, many duds, seemingly consecutively, at drafts when it comes to all the speculation and nothing happening.
We're going to start putting microphones in all the restaurants in Buffalo.
All right, Marty's a busy man. Enjoy the Game 5 tonight, and we'll do it again tomorrow on Sabres Live.